Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol. But as always, we're going to do a summary of some of the clips of this week. We're opening in this version of Wish I Was There with Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abele saying, the economic development around the new Bucks Arena, $240 million, and we're ending with a fascinating interview with the lady who painted the Pabst Blue Ribbon logo. So, wish I was there.
We were able to announce that the Park East, which is this big chunk of undeveloped land, previously undeveloped land in downtown Milwaukee, which had been undeveloped for almost 15 years, 100% is finance committed by developers and projects outside of the arena. So putting aside all the Bucks-related stuff, $240 million, about 8,000 jobs will be created, and that's just there, and it's been expanding. So we knew there'd be economic development, but this is in excess even of fairly rosy, you know, or at least optimistic projections.
But I think it's important to note that, you know, at a time where 45% of our state budget goes to school districts, and a time that we're asking for everybody to be open and transparent and spend money wisely, you know, when this issue came up, it was shocking to every single person I talked to that no one realized that schools were not required to go out for bidding, the same as we request of our smallest townships in the state.
In general, folks, I think that inside the state capitol, there's not a great appreciation for the level of expertise required of today's school business officials, nor is there an understanding of the level of sophistication with which school districts operate on financial issues.
If you look at the proposed budget cuts from the US EPA, 80% cut in diesel emissions reduction, 86% cut in climate change, climate protection program, including the Energy Star program, a 60% cut in research on sustainable and healthy communities, affecting a lot of our bread and butter grants that we go after at UW-Madison from the EPA. And when you think about the global climate crisis, you know, you can see the skeptics there saying, well, what if it's a big hoax and we create a better world for nothing?
Biggest challenge of that mural?
The circles.
Why? Explain that.
Okay. All right, Steve. Draw a perfect circle that's 16 feet wide.
Okay, go. I give up. I give up. Okay.
Right. But there's no compass, right? Because even if you could come up with a large compass, you have to hold one end and then hold the other. Well, I mean, my wingspan doesn't do that for that radius. And so what we had to do, my teenage daughter actually helped me come up with a solution, is we bought a long, we bought a 10-foot long board at Home Depot. We bolted it into the wall at the center, and we used it like a giant clock arm, and we guided our pencil all the way around, and we made perfect circles.
Okay, JR, we're back where we were a month ago. Joint Finance last met on June 15th. That's tomorrow. We still have a transportation funding deadlock. The governor is still saying no new tax increases. Senator Fitzgerald is now saying, how about borrowing more than $700 million? Mm-hmm. Speaker Voss is saying, read my lips, no new borrowing. And Nygren is with him. The Assembly Republicans are unified. We have seen this movie.
And the conversation hasn't changed in recent weeks, but a little bit of a hardening of the lines this week. And Robin Voss said essentially, because Scott Fitzgerald has been saying it is not reality to expect new revenues in the budget because of the governor's veto pen. So this week the line was from Fitzgerald, Robin Voss has to accept there'd be no new revenues. And Robin told us on Tuesday in a phone interview that I've accepted that. There are no new revenues. But then Fitz has to accept no new borrowing. Then we can get done and go home. The next day he met with Fitz and the governor came out to report the same thing. I'm okay with no new money or no new revenue. They accept no new borrowing. It seemed to be a little bit of a hardening of the line and saying that, okay, here's a way out of this. Let's just do this. Now, Fitzgerald's is a non-starter. You know, that would not get projects and these mega projects in Southeast Wisconsin going. His caucus wants, he says he needs 94 north south, east west, the third leg of the zoo to be going to get support in his caucus for it. But Robin seems to be locking in that, in his mind, it's a principled stand of, I can forego my pet project of 94 north south to put the transportation fund in a long term, in a better situation going forward. Because to him, when you borrow anything right now with no new revenue, you are eating up the principal and the transportation fund to go toward paying off these bonds. Now, when you talk to people in the Capitol, most think Robin's working an angle. What does Robin Voss want? That's a question I keep hearing. What does he want? What angle is he working? And I've been told that he's not. This is a principled stand for him about he wants this transportation fund in a good position going forward. 2 years ago, we were having a similar kind of fight, but it was a little quieter. It wasn't as kind of public what we're seeing right now. And back then, lawmakers hoped that, okay, once Governor Walker's in running for president, we come back here in 2017, we can do a long-term solution, not a Band-Aid. Well, here we are 2 years later, and they're talking about, in their minds, some of them, a Band-Aid approach again. There's no long-term solution for transportation. At what point do you say enough is enough, and we're going to find a fix?
We were supposed to get a new state budget on July 1. We're not there. Mm-hmm. And you and I worked a little bit in the Capitol press room this week. There is no sense of urgency in that building in terms of having an overdue budget. It's just, it doesn't seem to be a priority. The governor's off to the National Governors Association in Rhode Island, and a bunch of Assembly Republicans are going off to...
Well, we got NCSL and ALEC, I think, coming up, some things like that.
Right,
going on.
And Joint Finance is not going to meet next week.
Barring a minor miracle over the weekend, no.
And here's how unusual it got this week. When Representative Melissa Sargent stood up and said, let's legalize recreational and medical marijuana, it came up, well, this could be a source of transportation funding. That passed for news on the issue this week. So no sign of a deadlock, but really no gun to the head of these legis to pass a budget?
We're unique. So we're not like the federal government. There's no shutdown of our operations. We continue to go. So if you look at like the broad picture of the budget, schools, you know, October, they need to have some numbers to, you know, do their budgets. Local governments, October, November, need to pass their 2018 budgets. They need numbers in. But, you know, there are a couple, like August, there are a couple of smaller pieces of the transportation projects that would be let out that may be delayed. So that's a little bit of an issue. But we're not talking like everything grind to a halt all of a sudden in mid-August across the state or anything. So there's no pressure. Now, Fitzgerald's been meeting with this caucus regularly. They were at Fisker Bureau again this week trying to find, you know, some final positions on several issues. They're seeming to stay unified on no new revenue. A lot of focus has been on Robin Voss's caucus. As long as the Southern Republicans stay with Robin Voss on this position about revenue and bonding, he has leverage. I mean, there's a popular theory in the Capitol that Robin's outnumbered, which he is. It's 2-1. It's Fitzgerald and the governor versus Robin Voss. But you need three legs of that stool to pass a budget. So long as Robin has his caucus, he's got leverage. Now, if you get 25 members sign a letter saying, Robin, we want to do this.
Yes.
That changes the dynamic.
Yes, it does.
He can lose a dozen and be fine. As long as he's got 50 members with him, he's in a decent position. And I think from talking to members of his caucus this past week or so, there are people who want to know the end game. How do we get out of this? We need to get something done. But they're not feeling like a gun to the head just yet about, well, we got to compromise now because we look foolish now. Big picture, this continues to be an indictment of the Republican brand in Wisconsin of being able to govern. I've heard a comment from one lawmaker about he got grief back home of, you guys look like just Washington, D.C. anymore because they can't get things done. So a month from now, the budget's done, who cares? It's all going to be a faded memory come November of 2018.
That's true.
The longer it draws out.
Assuming we get a budget a month from now.
The longer it draws out, the more feasible perception of these guys are having difficulty governing. At what point does that put pressure on somebody? What I'm watching is who's going to blink. I get the impression talking to folks that Governor Walker cares about three or four things in his budget. He cares about, number one, the property tax bill. Long as that bill in 2018 is at or lower than 14, that's his number one priority. Number two, he wants to make sure his education investment is protected because that shores up a vulnerability for him. We all know he's going to run for re-election in 2018. It is pretty clear. One vulnerability has been
education funding. After I sign
funding.
A budget.
Yes.
Yes.
Can't do that until then. So he wants that investment to say, I put in this record amount of money into schools. That helps him a great deal. Number three, he wants no gas tax increase, no registration fee increase. Those are one of his bottom lines. Number four, he wants it done. I get the impression talking to folks, as long as those three things are in that budget, he's not too worried about other details about how this thing gets done. He just wants it done, knocked out, so you can get on to campaigning about these, in his mind, great things he's done with his budget.
To show the variety of voices on this, I had a chance to interview Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley. And one of my questions was, Mr. County Executive, should action, should funding for the East-West Freeway, remember from the stadium to State Fair Park, should that be included in the budget? And we got a very interesting answer. He's more interested in transit funding. Let's listen to that clip from Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley. The transportation funding, must it include funding for the East-West?
The way I think about it is that that's one of a bunch of proposed major projects. And when the DOT talks about, the Department of Transportation talks about the major projects, it's $1 billion plus. And, you know, for a relatively short section of East-West 94 going out of downtown Milwaukee, and to put it in perspective, for about $40 million, you could restore transit funding for the county and the whole state. And, you know, so $1 billion, $40 million, and as you mentioned before, the transit system right now has, you know, 150,000 rides per day, and that's people who, you know, 40,000 of which are using it to get to work. It's not a luxury, it's a necessity. So the relativities there are frustrating. I would much rather have, if I had to choose, support, robust support for transit.
JR, let's wrap up this subject. Here's one thing we can agree on. Legalizing marijuana and medical marijuana is not going to pay for transportation and highways in the future.
No.
Agreed?
Yes. And don't forget, even though transportation is our focus, they have some deep divides over the tax package, personal property tax versus income tax cut Walker
And the State General reported difference on expansion of school choice and vouchers.
That was an issue that we reported on, that it became an issue a month ago, and they're kind of getting to a point. Now, it's interesting to talk to members of those caucuses that they don't feel like necessarily they've all bought into a position, but yeah, there is a split about doing going to 3% of the federal poverty level for eligibility for the statewide choice program, or doing something on the caps and enrollment. There's some discussion about that.
Education savings accounts.
The special needs voucher.
Yep.
The school energy efficiency exemption for property tax caps.
Yeah.
So there are these smaller things that are going on, but really the attention is on transportation, but there's other things to work out before we get the thing done.
Okay, next subject. A federal judge came down with some pretty severe restrictions on the Department of Corrections in terms of its use of punishment at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lakes. And just a couple points. The federal judge, James Peterson, said, teen prison inmates in Wisconsin have faced, quote, the most severe and damaging type of solitary confinement that is used in American penal system. Consequently, he ordered ending solitary confinement for minor infractions or nonviolent incidents. Pepper spray and other chemical agents can only be used if an inmate is harming him or herself or attempting to harm others. There must be a mental health evaluation and counseling for those in solitary confinement, and 7-day maximum in solitary confinement. Let's put this in context. There is still a federal investigation into Lincoln Hills. No one knows when that's going to be concluded, whether somebody is going to be charged. So the fact, I'm struck, it took a federal judge to tell state officials cruel and unusual punishment has been going on at the teen prisons. Therefore, these changes must, non-negotiable, must be implemented.
Department of Corrections, after the injunction came down, said that they've already been making changes to improve things. The injunction came a few days after there was a filing from both sides trying to lay out what their proposal would be, where they could agree and where they couldn't. To generalize that filing, the state wanted more freedom to still use some of these things. The ACLU, part of the suit, basically is pursuing a position of, we want this to go away, period, at some point. You don't think it's right with teens at all. So this is going to force some changes, but what's the next thing that's going to drop with that federal investigation? And that could be a problem for Scott Walker next year with the re-election.
Could be a major campaign issue, depending on how the federal outcome comes. Okay, next subject. Milwaukee Business Executive Andy Gronick makes it official this week. You talked to him. Mm-hmm. In his statement, he said, I'm not a politician, I'm a business leader. Then he told a Milwaukee TV station, the lack of actually creating good jobs, the fact that we are taking our school system apart and attacking our teachers, and now our residents are at risk of losing dependable, affordable source of health care, completely unacceptable. What's your take on Gronick?
In talking to people this week, one, when you're from the private sector running for public office anymore, you can expect everything you've done in your past to be examined, because we don't really know what your record is. You don't have a voting record. We don't know how you voted on abortion or on taxes or on school choice, for example. So he can expect to have all these pieces of life to be examined and looked over for any clues about who he really is. Two, when you come from the private sector, sometimes the reality of running for office can be stark. It is a different experience. There are people I talk to who aren't convinced yet he's prepared for what this is like. Now, to be honest with you, lots of people in the private sector have to go through a transition period where they come up to speed on what it's like to run for office. Mary Burke, let's go back to the 2014 election. I mean, one of the key moments of that campaign was when she asked, how do you define plagiarism? Remember that pause?
Yes.
At the news conference? Things like that that you don't expect to come out of left field, that you have to be prepared for those things. So he is going to have an education from now until this primary, assuming he stays in, about what it's like to run for office, the questions going to be asked. The rollout this week, every kind of rollout I've covered in my experience, there are criticisms about what you did and second-guessing. He picked the AP to kind of break the story and then went on a series of outlets. You have less control of the message when you do that versus like doing a video. I mean, which we as journalists hate, right, because they're canned.
We absolutely hate it, but because it just shows up and we never know when.
But the control of the message is key for people trying to first impression. So, I think the jury's still out, I guess, bottom line about how he's going to be as a candidate and what threat he is to winning the nomination or to Governor Walker. But there's a long way from now until August of next year. He's got some things to prove.
And the Republican Party's, quote, rapid response team was immediately criticizing him, and Governor Walker said, called Mr. Gronick another far left and out-of-touch candidate. Just a programming note, in a few minutes, Mr. Gronick's going to be sitting right where JR is, and Wisconsin I is going to be doing its first interview with him as a candidate. Okay, there were some major fundraising numbers put up by some of our elected officials this week. Let's just run through them quickly. Governor Scott Walker raised $3.5 million between January and June. So he's cash on hand $2.4 million. Even the Lieutenant Governor Clayfish, $1.2 million cash on hand. Paul Ryan is just a money machine. Mm-hmm. He raises money and then he sends it to the Republican National Committees. He sends it to his fellow caucus members in the U.S. House. But in his campaign account, his own, he's sitting on 11-1. And Senator Tammy Baldwin raised $4.7 million January through June. She's sitting on 3-9. Any surprises in these numbers?
No, you got to put Ryan in a different category. He has
a
fundraising operation called Team Ryan. And so they have both his personal campaign account, the leadership PAC, and the House campaign committee. He's moving money around constantly. So on the one hand, I mean, direct contributions from individuals to his campaign account this quarter was like $200,000+. But he moved, but he's moving money constantly around. So I think it was several million that he raised because of transfers and everything else. But the bottom line is this guy is setting records constantly as a House speaker in terms of fundraising. Now, part of it is Ryan's, attractive person to go out there and raise the money. He's got a good shtick going. He told us when he ran for speaker, I'm not going to raise money constantly. So he's finding a way still to do it, even though he said, I'm going to be home for my family on the weekends. He also, this money is being driven because of these special elections that they're doing. Georgia, Kansas, I mean, there are lots of stuff going
North
on for
Carolina.
Republicans right now that they've needed to raise this money. Can he keep it up through next fall? An interesting question, but he is in a league by himself in some ways. I mean, Scott Walker has been one of the best fundraisers, a state candidate.
Yes.
Tammy Baldwin is showing that she can rival Scott Walker with his last fundraising period. Paul Ryan, though, is a kind of a different operation with the three-headed monster he is.
And just a P.S., Walker is now president of the Republican Governors Association. So he's out there, correct?
Yes.
He's out there printing money.
You add in the run for
president. For his fellow Republican governor.
Run for president plus the RGA chairmanship. He's creating new avenues for himself to raise money as well for his race. Don't forget the RGA is going to help governors next year.
Yep.
That helps him as well.
Yep. Okay, let's do a roundup of Wisconsinites, who are, native Wisconsinites who have gotten White House appointments. Last week, current Wisconsin Republican National Committee man Steve King, it was appointed or named the ambassador to the Czech Republic. This follows former state representative, gubernatorial candidate in 2006, Mark Green out of Green Bay, administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, and Whitehall's own Callista Gingrich, ambassador to the Vatican. No real surprises. Do you want to talk about the King appointment? He's been
King,
a bulwark.
The King appointment had been rumored for a while, and Paul Ryan was in Madison last week and talked about Steve King and the appointment and really praised him. So, not a surprise. interesting for Mark Green. He's going to lead an agency that may be on the chopping block or facing some restrictions or cuts. So it'll be nice to watch how that plays out. But, you know, nice things for all three of them.
Okay, now let's talk. U.S. Senate Republicans just came out with a health care bill. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Ron Johnson, who is one of the reasons they didn't vote in June. Now Johnson is signaling, I'm going to vote to bring this bill to the floor. Is that a pretty good indication that he's not going to be the one to derail this? Because the majority leader has already lost Rand Paul and Collins, and he can't lose anymore. Johnson isn't going to scuttle this thing, is he?
It'd be interesting to watch. He said he wants to see more time, wants to see more education about it. We'll see what form it takes. The CBO score, I think, is still coming up on this document. So he's saying right now, I won't stop the process, but I'm not sure that he's actually committed to voting for a bill yet. And what does he need to have in it to make him happy? Something to watch next week as the debate goes on.
Yeah, it really is. And Baldwin, of course, is saying this is a non-starter. She's on record as saying, I expect to again vote for any option for a universal single-payer system.
Republicans are trying to hammer her on that. They're going to hit her on the Affordable Care Act. They're going to hit her on that. But Baldwin has tied herself to health care. That is one of her senior issues because she has a personal experience as a child with a pre-existing condition and the battles that she went through. So for her, on the one hand, it's a personal experience, but two, after you've supported the Obamacare, you can't run away from it. So why would you try and distance yourself? I mean, she's embracing it because it's a reality of they're going to knock her anyway. Well, tout what you think you should do that would make it better than trying to run away from it.
One other item that happened this week. Court of Appeals judges approved our 2015 right-to-work law. No big surprise there.
No, I mean, unions, other than in Dane County courts, unions have not had much success challenging Act 10, right-to-work, these various things. So this is kind of another little blow for the unions. But not unexpected at all. I mean, the precedent has upheld these laws in other states, so it wasn't a shock the decision came down.
Okay, let's go into WisPolitics stock picks. Rising.
So Tammy Baldwin, it's interesting talking to her folks. When the governor announced his fundraising numbers on Tuesday, he kind of did it in a way to try and undercut Gronick's announcement a little bit, right? I mean, Gronick came out, not a couple hours later, there's Walker's number. Baldwin dropped her numbers on top of his, saying, well, that's nice, but look at mine. And what's interesting is, if you look at the six-month comparison, right, she outraised Walker with smaller contribution limits. So for individuals, he can do $20,000 at a pop. She has $2,700 for the primary and $2,700 more for the general election. So her folks love that comparison of we raise more with lower limits. It shows she's going to be a force financially. She has she's a federal office holder. She is the only openly gay member of the U.S. Senate.
Yes.
There's a national network. She can tap into donors there.
Yep.
I mean, and the stronger she looks for re-election, the better bet she is for people to give money to her. So this all helps her in that. Now, that's not to say she can breathe easy all of a sudden. There's a super PAC radio ad against her on abortion. Dick Uihlein, this man from Illinois, pumped
$1.5 million into
a super PAC.
Pumped how much more into a super PAC?
$1.5 million more. So he did $2 million in March, $1.5 million this report.
Backing one candidate, million. Kevin Nicholson, who's not yet officially in. Excuse me for interrupting you,
that is
a boatload of money from one source.
So, and remember, her Marquette numbers were even last time, right? This followed a series of ads that were hitting her on Toma VA, and then some of that fired back to try and control some of that damage. So she's got some hurdles. The other thing is the GOP field is not solidified for her. I mean, Republicans love knocking the Democratic field for governor, saying it's not really there yet. Well, on the GOP side, for the Senate, you've got, you know, Eric Hovde's got plenty of time to say if he wants to run because he's got personal wealth. So we expect him to get in until maybe September, October, if he feels it necessary. Nicholson's been very quiet since state convention. We haven't heard much from him. And then you have Leah Vukmir, who we all think is all but in, essentially. But every day that budget is dragging on is one day less for out there raising money for a Senate campaign. So now, she can go out and do speeches, and she can kind of get pledges, but it's hard to run a campaign when you're not out there actually campaigning. And she's going to have a difficult time possibly raising money if you have a self-funder and somebody's got a big super PAC backing. How do you make the argument sometimes to raise money? Oh, and by the way, lots of state candidates have found out that people give to them because they're in the legislature don't necessarily open their pocketbooks for a federal bid. Ask Jeff Fitzgerald about that, U.S. Senate in 2012.
That's true.
You know, it's reality. But, I mean, now, Leah, though, has a record. She has, the credibility with the base. So it's going to be fascinating to watch that dynamic play out. Kaying is still out there. You know, Fitzgerald, I don't really get a lot of buzz about him anymore, U.S. Senate. But the field isn't there yet. So she's got some good money stuff going for in an unsettled field, so she's in decent shape right now.
Mixed.
So Scott Walker, the money, I mean, the campaign is there. It is waiting. The key's in the ignition. He can't turn it on until his budget is done, right?
That's true.
The fundraising was pretty good. Don't forget the RGA. That's another feather in his cap for him. But Walker said he's not going to announce until after the budget's done. Well, it's not done. So every day they delay is one day he pushes back that announcement. Now, we all know he's going to run. He's out there doing events. It's not like when he goes someplace, he's not saying, he's not really campaigning.
He just sent out this email to strumming on the same old themes.
Yes, but he can't launch until this is done. And now, the other thing is with the budget, it's interesting to watch the dynamic. Governor Walker 2 years ago kind of said, here's the budget, guys, I'm going to run for president.
Yep.
Like, his chief of staff at the time was basically running the show for him while he was gone. And it got delayed a little bit because he wasn't personally engaged. This time around, he can't get them to get this thing done. I mean, I'm not sure how much his influence is working in the legislature. Sent that letter about, like, here's my proposal to break this impasse on transportation. I did not see it break the impasse.
Nor did he have a fallback plan B to offer this week.
And it's not necessarily that he doesn't have limited influence, but his ideas aren't necessarily pushing these guys to a finish line. And so for Walker, there's this kind of dynamic of he needs his budget done, but he can't get them to get it done. So it's kind of fascinating to watch how that plays out. And I'm not quite sure that Scott Walker is the bully pulpit guy, like a Tommy Thompson who go out there and twist arms. It's not really his style. And if somebody told me this week, if Walker picked a side, said, I'm with Scott Fitzgerald, publicly said, we're doing this, he said no revenue, but he used a bully pulpit and started campaigning against Robin Voss, for example, that might move things. Or if you side with Robin Voss, that could move things. But he's not really publicly saying, this budget needs to be done now, put it on my desk, I gave you a plan. He's not there yet.
Okay, and falling.
Abortion, it's down for 7 straight years, number performed.
It is. I looked up the number. 5,612 induced abortions in Wisconsin last year, a 1% decrease. The all-time high, 1980, 21,754. So you have a 3/4 drop, if my math is right.
And there could be any number of reasons for this, right? I mean, better sex education, higher use of birth control, teens waiting up. I mean, all kinds of things like that. You also have to point to some of the drops coming since Governor Walker took office, and there have been a series of restrictions on abortion. Some have been struck down by the court. The latest one was a ban on abortion up to 20 weeks.
Clinics have closed in Wisconsin.
Less access. So all this is kind of coalescing together, probably playing a factor in those numbers.
No, number of abortions down. Okay. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind for July 14th. And we're still waiting on a budget from our Capitol friends. Thank you.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.